This is the Side Hustle Show with Nick Loper, episode 35, from $18 an hour to $1,000 an hour in 60 days. How to use the marsupial method to build a side hustle business.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey everybody, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. This is episode 35, from $18 an hour to $1,000 an hour in 60 days with Daniel DiPiazza from rich20something.com. We're going to cover what he calls the marsupial method for building a side hustle business. Now, I found Daniel through a guest post he did on under30ceo.com called Hacking Elance. Still one of the best posts I've ever read on scoring freelance clients on that platform, or on any platform, to be honest. So I'll link to that in the show notes. I've shared it with a dozen people since I found it, I think, over the summer. Just really, really great stuff. So I'll put that in the show notes for this episode at sidehustlenation.com/episode35. So we recorded this session right after I got back from New Media Expo in Las Vegas, which was awesome. Got a ton of ideas for Side Hustle Nation and met, half a dozen of the previous guests on the show. It was really, really cool. But my flight was delayed getting back home. I didn't get back home until 3:30 this morning. And you know the sad thing? That means my latest night out in Vegas was actually my trip back home. So a couple quick shouts before we get Daniel on the line. First, Nick Ruiz from recycledgogetter.com and episode 30 of this Side Hustle Show. Dropped in a new 5-star iTunes review. He says, love the hustle. I don't subscribe to too many shows, but this one is mandatory for me. Love Nick's content. Keep them coming, brother. And next one is from EST191144. He or she, it could be, says, honestly helpful. This podcast is useful and worth my time. Well, we aim to please. Thank you for your reviews. If it's not worth your time, stop listening. Seriously. But you're going to love this chat with Daniel from rich20something.com, and let's jump right into it. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Nick, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me so much.
All right, everybody. Daniel is a freelance entrepreneur. He's got a unique way of looking at business I think you're really going to like. So today we're going to talk about how he removed the middleman, aka his company, from getting to his real customers and started a freelance online business that generated $15,000 in revenue in the first 2 weeks. So Daniel, let's start off from the beginning. Your kind of quick backstory. How did you get started as an entrepreneur trying to make money online or just in general?
Oh, you made that sound so cool. I wish I could. That's the way I want to be able to tell it. I still have trouble when people ask me, so what do you do? I'm like, I do stuff on the computer. So that's a good question, man. I guess the main way I started was kind of, I was at an impasse. And so about 21, 22, I just got out of school and I thought to myself, you know, I have a couple options here. I can go back to school and I can get another degree. But I didn't want that because I didn't feel like I wanted to do anything in the professional set. So I didn't want to do doctor, lawyer, engineer. That didn't interest me. But I also didn't want to do corporate. That really scared me. I always tell my friends and my parents, I felt like one of those fat kids at the YMCA swimming pool with the water wings on. And I felt like all my friends were in the pool. And they're like, Daniel, come on, jump in. The water's great. And I was like, no, I don't want to come in. Okay. I felt about the corporate environment, you know, wasn't interested. Unfortunately, though, what that left me doing was pretty average wage jobs, you know, $7, $10. So it wasn't really a good situation. And so I was working at a restaurant. This is about 2 years ago now. And I thought to myself, you know, this really sucks. I need to figure out a way to do something for myself. So I started racking my brain. I thought, you know, I've made it this far. I've got to have some sort of monetizable skill. And I remembered that I worked at Kaplan, which is a test prep company owned by the Washington Post. I worked there in college. I'm pretty good at standardized tests. I do well.
Okay.
And so I worked there and I taught the SAT and ACT and GRE and all that kind of good stuff. And I thought, you know, I remember when I was there, I made about $18 an hour, which was really good at the time. I mean, it's actually pretty good for any wage job. $18 an hour is pretty good.
Yeah, definitely.
It definitely is good. And I didn't get 40 hours a week, but I still felt good about that. But I remember one day I was reading through some of the promo materials, and it's not like this was kept secret, but it really shocked me. I saw that the rate for my services was over $100 an hour. It was like $110 an hour.
So Kaplan's paying you $18, but they're collecting $120 from the customers?
Correct. Exactly. And okay. I was like, whoa, hold on. Because, I mean, sometimes literally it was me driving to the client's houses. Like I kind of understand when I'm in like the Kaplan facility, which they don't have too many of them anymore. I kind of understand when I'm in their building and they have to pay lights and management and all that kind of stuff. I kind of understand. I think it's still a rip. But literally a lot of times I'm driving to their houses and I like Kaplan's just like, all right, go do this thing. I'm like, okay. And I thought it was a great deal. But when I realized that they were taking 100 for every 20 of my dollars, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, that's a pretty good markup.
Yeah, it's a really good markup, you know? So I learned a couple things. One, I learned that my services were worth quite a lot of money. And that's a huge mental shift when you realize that something that you do is worth a lot of money to somebody when you didn't think it was – you didn't really put too much thought into it.
Right.
You know? And the other mental shift was that, you know, obviously – it wasn't me that was at a disadvantage. It was them because they're really the middleman. I'm the one with the skill. So I started up my own test prep company. And the 30-second explanation of how I did that was I thought to myself, okay, well, I don't have any clients, but I do have a good background in teaching this stuff. So I went out into the community. I was in Atlanta at the time. I went to the community and I looked for private admissions counselors who help high-profile students get into Yale, Harvard, all these high-level schools, and they exist out there. And man, that's how these kids are getting into these big schools. They hire private guidance counselors. And so I looked for these guys. I said, hey, you help craft applications, but I help people get amazing test scores. You need that. And so I asked them, hey, you know, I'll come in-house with you, and I will be your in-house test prep guy. You refer me your clients, and I'll give you a small amount of money back.
Okay.
And and I was instantly in business, and I literally had more clients than I can handle.
So basically, I set up an affiliate relationship with these counselors.
Absolutely. Worked out beautifully.
Was there any pushback from the counselors being like, hey, you know, who is this guy? You know, what are his credentials? Like, I'm putting my reputation on the line, sending my customers to you?
Well, you know, actually, the way it ended up working out was – there was a period of time where some of the counselors were hiring they were outsourcing their clients to Kaplan. So basically, the clients would come to them and say, "Hey, I want to go to Yale. What do I do?" And he'd say, "Well, you need X, Y, and Z, and you also need test prep. Here, go to my guy at Kaplan."
Okay.
And so they were already outsourcing, and since they knew I was from Kaplan, since I came with that kind of that skill set that they knew about, they trusted that. Because they knew that if you teach at Kaplan, you can only be in the top, you know, 95 percentile of all test takers, whatever. Okay. And so they already trusted that. And plus, you know, they were frankly making more money from my affiliate relationship than they were from Kaplan. So it was easy win.
Yeah, I got you. When there's that much margin involved, it's easy to find a middle ground where everybody can win.
Well, think about it this way. You know, Kaplan charges about $1,000 for their premium test prep courses, which honestly is really reasonable because I took Kaplan. It did like wonders for me. I have, again, no super reason to endorse them. I just think they do good work. But it does work. So I think $1,000 is even worth it. But I'm like, you know what? I don't have all this overhead. So I ended up charging like maybe $297 for the same class. It's a 6-week class, which is just, it meets once a week, six times. So it's just, and it meets for, you know, like maybe 2 hours. So 12 hours of work pretty much.
Okay.
I ended up charging $300. And but when you have a class of 30 kids, that's $10,000 basically, you know, for 12 hours of work. So we're looking at around, you know, not including the work that you'll do at home, but just like in classroom, like around $1,000 an hour, which what?
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. What? So to go from that'd be a great blog article, from $18 to $1,000 an hour. That's a good article.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome story for sure.
I need to write that.
Yeah, take a note of that. Okay, was there any pushback from Kaplan on like, hey, you signed a non-compete or something like that?
I mean, first of all, I think there's a certain like limitation on that in terms of time, but I looked into that, and I think that it was only a non-compete if I was going to directly poach their clients. So that would mean that they were clients that I'd taught at Kaplan personally already, and I offered them my services on the side. There were different little loopholes, but the reality is you can't own a skill set. So I wasn't using Kaplan materials to prep these kids. I just learned how to teach this stuff. But you can't lock down my intellectual property at this point. Like, if I know how to teach algebra, that's mine. It's not yours.
That makes sense. Okay. So yeah, one point in I found on your website was, like, if you are employed or if you've ever been employed, you have at least one skill that's worth money to someone.
Exactly.
So I thought that was a pretty cool kind of light bulb moment, and to try and it kind of gets the juices flowing, right? Like, oh, you know, you can look back through your whole resume and be like, okay, what did I do here? What did I do here? And it's like, okay, is this something that's going to be that could be you know, monetizable on my own.
Absolutely. And one thing that I found is that, first of all, we usually undervalue ourselves. So usually your skill is worth a pretty significant amount of money to people, because if they're not doing it, it means they really don't want to do it. You know, either they don't want to do it or they don't have the time. You think about menial tasks like, oh, well, I'm just a janitor. And I'm not saying that, you know, I don't even know if premium janitors exist, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you think about, like, things that people don't want to do that they view as, like, low-level work, but you don't want to do that. In fact, you're paying a whole staff of janitors collectively hundreds of thousands of dollars a year so you don't have to clean this poop up. So obviously it's worth a lot of money to you. So, you know, every skill has a value, and sometimes it's a lot more than we think.
Yeah, so some enterprising janitor went out there and was like, okay, I'm going to, I don't know, start on my own, which is probably how half of them got started anyways.
Yeah, I mean, that's how cleaning service, I mean, now you might not want to be the actual maid, but if you start a maid service, totally works, you know? Yeah.
So are you still doing this test prep stuff?
No, man, I'm retired. which sucks though, because one of the cool things, like being an adult and still doing quadratic equations, I think is so cool. Like, I know this makes me sound like a complete dork, but I think it's so cool to be doing things that most people forget immediately after high school. But I am sadly letting it go like a language, and hopefully I'll remember it when my kids need to use it later.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge, I think.
They'd be like, I thought you said you taught this. I'm like, I did. I forgot.
That was a long time ago, man. So what are you working on now?
Oh, man. I have a lot of cool projects going on. So what ended up happening with the test prep is I started the test prep business. That worked out really well. But then I wanted to go mobile. I wanted to be able to work from anywhere, because test prep is a lot of driving and prep time. And so, you know, I started up a web design company, and then I made the very short story of that is I thought to myself, all right, well, I'm going to do web design, but I'm really good at selling. I'm not that good at designing. So let me just sell the websites, and I'll, have friends or sometimes even outsourcers just do them for me. And I'll collect a commission off that. So that ended up working out pretty well. So I kind of had those two businesses running at once. That was fun. And then I wanted to take it to the next level. And I thought, well, you know, let me
hold on. So you're approaching potential customers and say, you need a website, or you need to improve your existing website. I can do that for you. And then turning around and being like, I don't have any idea how to do that. So I'm going to find somebody to get that done for you.
Well, the actual thing that happened was I'm decent at designing websites, but my main problem is that, just like most of us, I can learn anything. So if it's my personal website, if I need to do something, I can afford to spend 4 hours figuring it out. But if I have a web design client, you know, not only do I need to do it well, but I need to do it pretty quickly too to be able to scale.
Yeah.
So what I was realizing was that, yeah, I could learn how to do this, but I can't scale fast enough to do this to the best of my ability and make the most money that I need.
Right.
You know, cause I'm just proficient. I can do some HTML, I can do some CSS, but it's sometimes it's a struggle. So, you know, that's the struggle.
Yeah.
So,
I'm in the same boat. Like, I spent, like the better part of, you know, a day and a half, like trying to do these like minor, you know, CSS tweaks and theme customizations and stuff. And it's fun. Like when you hit refresh and you're like, oh, it actually did what I thought it was going to do. But, it can be frustrating too, to bang your head against the wall for an hour and a half. And
yeah, you're like, float, damn it. I said, float, right.
Yeah.
Float. it's fun and frustrating when it's for your projects, but once for a client, like, I'm literally like, well, I'm down from $50 an hour to $35 now. Now I'm down to $12. Now I'm making no money.
Yeah.
You know?
definitely. Because
it's very frustrating. So I thought to myself, all right, well, I wrote this article. I did this whole research, this really detailed research on Elance on how to get clients, how to find them, how to convince them to pick you to do their work. And I realized through this whole process that I was really good at selling. And here's the key to this. It's, you know, it's very counterintuitive, but it's make a video sales pitch, 30 seconds to 2 minutes, but make a video sales pitch. No one on Elance is doing it. And even me saying it on here, no one's still going to do it because people are too scared or they think that it's not a good idea. But trust me, it works.
Yeah. When I read that, I was like, this is the simplest, this is the dumbest thing that, you know, people could easily set themselves apart. If you ever post anything on Elance, you know, you get like 50 replies. Half of them are just form letters where they just like auto blast you with garbage. Dear sir, dear madam, dear hiring manager. It's like, did you even read the thing? So when somebody is going to take the time to do a video, even if their price is going to be a little bit higher than maybe the average, it's a awesome way to kind of combat the race to the bottom that these freelance sites kind of get their reputation for.
Exactly. And so look, man, you just run the numbers. If you start doing, you know, at one point I was doing five video pitches a day. So maybe around, you know, 20 to 25 a week, I was landing, you know, about two a week at an average of $2,000. So we're talking $4,000, you know, times maybe I could do that. Maybe I could do that every week. Maybe at 1 week I nailed none. Maybe 1 week I did one, but I was.
And this is for the web design stuff or what kind of work are you targeting here?
This is all web design.
Okay.
So, you know, so some weeks two or one, some weeks zero, but on average, maybe like eight a month, you know, eight at $2,000 is, you know, nice $10,000 to $16,000, depending on, you know, what the price is. It's pretty decent money, you know? Yeah.
No, I think a lot of listeners would be happy. I'd be happy with that. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's in it. So it's good. But then I realized, you know, I need to outsource this stuff. And so that cut into my profits too. And then it became, like managing people, which isn't necessarily my favorite thing to do. It's a good skill set, but it's not the thing I want to do forever.
Yeah.
So as I started writing about this stuff and I started getting a little bit more traction and people were kind of started to grow a little bit of a following, my writing started to get a little bit better. And then what ended up happening is it started snowballing into consulting. So I started writing things. People started paying attention when I was writing. Then people came to me and said, hey, do you want to write for us? What do you think about this? Can you design a product funnel for that? And so now what I'm basically doing is I'm using my blog to run a consulting business. And in the meantime, I'm working on a couple other cool side projects. I'm launching a dropshipping business this year. I'm launching a book so I can get some passive streams.
Cool.
And trying to get everything rolling.
What's the book about?
So the book is, I'm very secretive about it. No, it's called Hacking Coffee, and it's about ways to optimize your brew to give it more caffeine, make it taste better, make it stronger, find the best blends, find the best ways to make it.
Oh, okay. Sounds like an interesting one for sure.
Yeah. And it's a pretty good niche book. So it's going to be easier to rank, I think.
Okay, cool. So one thing, this is kind of going back to the test prep stuff, but you call this method that you used the marsupial method. And yes. kind of walk us through why you gave it this name, and kind of we'll just go through these steps real quick.
Yeah, so marsupial. So marsupials, they keep their young in pockets. I know kangaroos are marsupials. I know that possums are marsupials. Are koalas marsupials? I don't know.
That sounds familiar.
I think
you're the test prep guy. Isn't that a question?
Yeah. No, I think that koalas are. I think they keep little babies in the pocket. Anyway, so the whole idea is it's a scary world out there, and it's very hard to find clients, and it's intimidating to go to people that you don't know and ask them to buy your services. And also sometimes you just don't know where to look. So the best thing to think is, where are the people that I want to work with? Where are they already doing business? Who are they already doing business with? This is the reason why, you know, Coca-Cola and AMC movie theaters team up, because their two customers are in the same place, you know?
Right.
This is the reason why, Reese's Pieces and, you know, Jif Peanut Butter team up around Christmas to make like those Christmas cookie things, you know, like it works. The customers are all in the same place, And so it's easy to make sales, cross sales that way. So I thought to myself, all right, well, I need to find out where my customers already are. And the first key to that is identifying who your real customer is. And we talked about that. So when you're identifying your real customer, let's just take Test Prep as a specific example. Who would you think the customer is?
Yeah, the initial thing is like the student.
Yeah, but obviously that's not correct because they don't have any money and they're not particularly interested in your services anyway.
You know? Their parents are making them go, right?
Their parents are making them go. I know that's what happened to me, and they have no money. Now, when you get into like grad school, GRE, it changes because they get super serious about it themselves. And grad students will spend almost any amount of money to get preparation to get into their target school, within reason, you know. But yes, yeah, so
– What a difference the 5-6 years makes.
right, exactly. So – we figured, okay, that the parents are the real targets here. And then let's get a little bit more specific because Test Prep isn't cheap. You know, when I was doing one-on-one, my rate, I went from 7, because I only did the business for about 14 months. About 14 months. Okay. But even 14-month time frame, I went from $75 to $85 an hour, which is, I think it's pretty decent. But to be honest with you, it's not undervalued. It's actually pretty. It's a little bit. It's about 20% below the average market price. So,
yeah, so still delivering great value for customers, and yeah. You know, what is that, quadrupling your average wage?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a little bit more than that, but even so, $85 an hour, and I only do 2-hour sessions. I don't do 1-hour sessions. So we're talking, you know, $170 a session. And they need multiple sessions. It's not cheap. Yeah. So when you think about it that way, you're like, all right, well, I don't want to be exclusionary, but I also want to target my business to be the most profitable it can be. So I want to look for people who have disposable income and the means. So the first step of the marsupial method is finding your ideal customer. So my ideal customer were parents with disposable incomes, which usually means in, you know, like communities with lots of private schools. Okay. And who also have like specific focus on getting into elite schools. Because if you're going to a state school for college, unless you want one of the best scholarships out there, you're not always gunning to spend a lot of money on Test Prep.
Yeah, you don't need that 1500 SAT or whatever.
Or you're certainly not going to spend thousands of dollars. I mean, I have parents who alone for just one-on-one stuff paid me, you know, more than $5,000. And it just didn't make sense to me. It was like blew my mind because there's definitely a capacity where the student is going to do as well as they're going to do.
Yeah, that's that puts so much pressure on the kid. I feel bad for them.
and I would tell them that, but they just wanted me to kind of – sometimes it actually became a very comfortable relationship where after the student would take the test, they just keep having me back to just chat. I don't know what was going on. But
making friends. Yeah,
right. So I identified my customers. I knew exactly who I was going after, and I targeted private admissions counselors who worked directly with this clientele base.
Okay. Yeah, this is not something that that Ryan was talking about on last week's episode. Kind of he was selling SEO services, and so he's talking about developing these strategic partnerships with kind of complementary businesses.
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, you know, if somebody is buying, you know, web design or, you know, something like that, that's probably a complementary service to my business. If they're, you know, working on building their website up, they are likely to be in the market for SEO. So he went out and created these partnerships with the local web design firms. I was like, well, that's pretty smart. And same sort of deal. Like, oh, you know, you refer clients my way, I'll send you a finder's fee, and likewise.
Absolutely, it totally works.
So, what other kind of side hustles kind of work best for this? Like, you know, kind of this skills-based kind of thing. I'm kind of trying to get some more flesh out some more ideas for it.
Yeah, well, okay. So first of all, we talked about on a big scale how major distributors and products do this, but we're not at that level yet. And I think the best thing to start off as when you're trying to work for yourself is as a freelancer. And I think there's a distinction between freelance work and entrepreneurship. I think it's sometimes an overlooked distinction, but A freelancer is someone who still trades their hours for their time, but they control their schedule and their job. So they just basically they have clients. They work when they want to. As long as their clients are happy, they're happy. They make money for when they work, or sometimes they're on a retainer. But I mean, it's still based on the hours that they put in. You know, if they're going to do the work, they get the money. I see an entrepreneur as a little bit of a broader term, but it also includes someone who starts a business and works on the higher level of the business without having to necessarily go down and hit a certain amount of hours or do a specific task. You know, so an example of that would be, I guess a simple example would be if you were to start a drop shipping business where it was your responsibility to make sure that that packages went out and everything ran smoothly in the system, but you weren't necessarily on the phones making the calls. There's a little bit of a difference, you know?
Okay. Could you use the marsupial method in some sort of drop shipping operation?
You might be able to, but the point that I'm trying to make is that when you're first starting off freelance entrepreneurship, so freelance work where you're trading a certain skill for money is the best way to start. So that could be think about anything that you can teach. Those are great ways to use the marsupial method. So if you're talking about test prep, if you're talking about anything with athletics, if you're thinking about anything with art, if you're thinking about anything with social skills. So because there's dating coaches and things like that.
Yeah. Or some sort of like professional certification or something.
Exactly. Anything where you can teach something, which is why I think teaching is a pretty overlooked skill. I think it's probably the least paid profession in the world, you know, compared to how much work is put into it, but it's extremely useful. And so if you're good at something, or even if you are an intermediate at something, you can be a teacher, because the reality is most people start off as beginners, and most people stay beginners. So as long as you're able to communicate your skills at someone, you can teach them, and you can use that as a skill to make money off of.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, we've already seen the income potential and kind of just really skyrocketing your hourly wage. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
It's awesome. You have to pay a lot of taxes on it, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah, you don't have the overhead. You don't have the big write-off that Kaplan has for the building and everything else.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Well, very cool. Daniel, thanks so much for kind of coming on the show and kind of sharing these tips. I think it would be eye-opening for a lot of people. But let's kind of wrap things up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
A lot of people are chasing after their passion and they want to do something that makes them really happy. And I agree with that. I'm cool with that. I think that it's a great ambition. So I think that we should strive to do things that make us happy. But I also think that what we often overlook is when we become really good at something, we start liking it more. And then we grow the passion afterwards. So, for instance, I actually am not really a big tennis fan. I don't like it. I mean, I'm just pretty neutral about it.
Okay.
But if I woke up tomorrow and I was like Roger Federer, I would fucking love it. Sorry, I would love it. But I would love it because, you know, the better you are at something, you're like, man, this really is fun. Yeah, it's really fun when you're crushing something. Yes. You know, it's awesome. But the cool thing about that is that's not about talent. That's about cultivating skill. So if you look at something and you're like, okay, well, this has a pretty decent outlook. I think this could help me to achieve my goals. When you start trying it and you start becoming world-class at something, then you really start to appreciate it and you get passionate about it. So like, for instance, I have a friend who he owns a business where he sells basically like rave party supplies. And I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's just – like it's pretty normal stuff, and you'd be like, oh, who's passionate about selling rave party supplies? Like it's just like glow sticks and stuff. What is that?
Okay.
But you know, like he's gotten so good at it now, and he's doing like $20,000 a month selling these like party supplies, and he's so good at like optimizing the website, and he like tracks all the numbers. He's so good at it, he becomes like super passionate about it, and it's fun for him now because he's good at it. And so you can kind of reverse engineer your passions, and rather than always chasing something that immediately appeals to you, why don't you find something that seems like it could be a good fit and then work at it and become passionate by becoming world-class.
Okay. I kind of like that. And I hadn't heard that before, but that makes perfect sense. Yeah. If I was Roger Federer, I'd be like, oh, I love tennis too. I
love tennis. Yeah. It's awesome. You know? So like, I don't like dancing, but if I woke up and I was a salsa dance like champion, I'd be like, yes, this is amazing. I'm awesome. You know?
Yeah, and the way to get there is just practice, put yourself out there and you kind of build, like you said, cultivate that skill and make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Cool. Daniel, thanks so much. Hey, everybody, check Daniel out at rich20something.com. That's 20, the number, and not spelled out. Anywhere else people should find you?
No, that's a great place to find me. You can also find me on Twitter at rich20something. And yeah.
Cool. Check out the site. Tons of great stuff. I'm a fan.
Appreciate you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
There it is. Tons of smart side hustle advice from someone who's walked the path. Now, your homework is to think of what kind of in-the-pocket relationships you can start working, to start working the marsupial method yourself. Now, I've got to percolate on that a little bit, but it makes perfect sense. Those complementary businesses where, you know, that your customers are already interacting with. So that's it for this week's show. No more rambling at the end. Let me know what you think in the comments at sidehustlenation.com/episode35, and I'll see you next week in episode 36. Thanks so much. Until next time, go out there and make something happen. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.
Man, 35 episodes? This is starting to be a pretty legit show.